good people. It's your girl, Fredrika McClary Easley, back with another episode of The People Are Blunt. Before I kick it to my guests, let me just handle a little housekeeping. So, like, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff, people. We are on all the platforms. We are on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Prime Music, Apple Music, you name it, we there. We need you to be there as well. Don't forget to hop on over to thepeoplesecosystem.com and check out our wellness and our merch lines. So we have the People's Cannabis, we have Smoke Biz, we have the People Are Blunt. Here we go. All the good things. And so, without further ado, y'all, Crysto Bush is in the building. What's up, boo?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you again. So, Christine actually introduced us at South By, and we had an opportunity to speak for a few minutes, and I was like, yo, you got to come on a podcast.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Please, let's do this. Let's chop it up. So thank you for making it happen. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's an honor. When I met you guys, I was just like meeting so many different people. You know how people like, I'm going to follow up with you. So you found me on LinkedIn. It was like, all these weeks, I found you, girl. I need you. I was like, okay. Yeah. So it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Because I put your number in my phone and I didn't put like a proper tag with it. So when I was going back, I was like, yo, I got to find Crysto. It was, again, networking, so many numbers. And I was like, yo, I'm going to find her. Like, I'm going to make this happen. Yes. Inspector Gadget over here. Inspector Gadget. So tell the people a little bit about yourself. I have questions. Definitely want to dig into it. But tell the people who you are. I know you're from Philly. Tell the people who you are, where you from.
Hey guys, my name is Crysto. I'm from Philly. I'm a cannabis patient. I'm an advocate. I adopted my nephew. I am a daughter. I'm a sister, but most importantly, I'm just a person that's on like this quest to just figure out how to make this world just better. I got into the cannabis industry just after like shutting down my prison van service. I was running that prison van service for 10 years. And it really just took a toll on my health, financially, emotionally. So I ended up just going to therapy. And my therapist was like, listen, you got diagnosed with PTSD and depression. And she basically was just like, you got to take medicine. And me just being honest saying, hey, well, you know, I do consume, you know, cannabis at night. She gave me the opportunity to say, you know, hey, well, if you don't want to take medicine, you can, you know, get your medical marijuana card here in the state of Pennsylvania. So back in 2019, I ended up getting my medical marijuana card and really just started going to the dispensaries. And the more that I went to the dispensaries, the more I realized that I didn't see really like people, black and brown people inside of these dispensaries. And I started having conversation with people who rode my prison van service and was asking them like, hey, do you guys know that you can get your medical marijuana card? And many of those people did not even know that we even had dispensaries in our community. So I said, okay, well, you know, me just being proactive, I said, all right, I'm gonna just start a business. So I started a cannabis ancillary business called Stay Lifted. And I work with different doctors where I was just, you know, really just bridging that gap between patients and the doctor and just helping people get their medical marijuana card. And then I noticed even then, like when 420 would come around here in Philly, we didn't really have like no events, no safe havens where, you know, patients could just hang out. So I started, you know, just having these patient parties and I would have doctors come and certify the people on the spot. I also would bring in people that's on the legacy side, you know, prior to them coming to the event, I was helping them with their marketing, helping them with their packaging, just so they can look presentable at these events and just in general. So I help patients.
Let me stop you there for a minute. Because first of all, so when I was doing my research on you, one thing kept coming up and it was service. Because yes, it seems like everything you do is about or in service to the people, from your van service to the creation of Staying Lifted. And then we'll get into Free My Weed Man, because I see that's on your tag. So we definitely got to get into that. But so you have this entrepreneurial spirit, right?
Yes.
You're saying this stuff as if it's easy, but we know it's not easy, right? We know it's not easy. So let's dig into real quick, just to lay a foundation. So your prison van service, what motivated you to start that service? Like, who were you being in service to?
So growing up, my father was locked up since I was 3 years old. So I like to think that I really was sort of like born into the cannabis. I mean, not the cannabis, the criminal justice system, born into the prison system, just going to go see him at a younger age. But I remember from the time that I was like 5 or 6 till I was like 19 and was able to drive myself, I did not go see my father because he was, you know, placed so far away. So just from personal experience, I knew that, you know, the distance that they sent our family members to, it affected me. It affected, you know, me and him having a good relationship. We remained in contact, but we just didn't see each other. So I ended up, that motivated me to go to college and major in criminal justice. And I went to, you know, college, majored in criminal justice to become a social worker. Me and you know that social workers don't really get paid that much. So I knew that I would need to come up with something else. The math just wasn't mathing while I was even in college. But I'm like, it's easy. I'm gonna be able to do it. So I took my refund check while I was in college, and I basically just went to the auction and bought a used van, and I started carpooling. So this was like the time like when Uber just came out. So I was like, I'm gonna be the Uber of these prisons. So I went from having one van to 4 vans, and I was just doing door-to-door service here in Philly, where I was, you know, just picking people up, mainly women who rode my service, women and children, and just taking them to the prisons. I was going to 17 out of 22 of the state prisons of Pennsylvania, and I service over 3,500 families, just reuniting them with their incarcerated loved ones, working with the Department of Human Services. For me, being a social worker, I knew that side, so I was able to advocate for the children whose parents were incarcerated. So some of the judges who knew the service that I'd done, they were court ordered for that child to ride my service to go and see their incarcerated loved one. But it really came from my own personal experience with all the men in my family being incarcerated. And it really was like a hustle, you know, like it wasn't, when I started, it wasn't this thing like where we see like entrepreneurs. It was like, I was sort of forced into it because we started out carpooling and the prisons was like, you know, nope, you can't do it. And me, I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. So slowly.
Because that's what black women do. Because black women, we figure shit out. Right. So, So, you know, you mentioned at some point going to see a therapist. You mentioned that after 10 years, you had to stop doing this because of the toll that it took on you, right? And the PTSD and things of that nature. And you mentioned that most of those seeking your service were women. So I want to tap into for 1 minute, because we know that cannabis arrest, whether it's for possession or sale, that we are 4 times more likely to end up behind bars. And so we often talk about the impact of that for those who are serving the time, but there are family members and there are communities that are also serving the time, you know, whether we're going to see them, whether that is now money that is no longer in the household, that's a face that's not there, whatever the case may be. So, as you are serving the people and taking on this, I want to just kind of dig into, like, why was that so traumatic for you? You know what I'm saying? Like, why did that take such a toll on you?
It took a toll because little old me, here it is, I got this business, but I'm doing agency work, you know, like reuniting when I was underfunded, you know, we're going to be all the way real, underfunded. So the longer I was in business, yeah, my business was successful in a sense that all the seats on my van was filled up. But at the same time, when you're in business and you scale up too fast and you don't have the right systems in place, then, you know, it's hard. It's hard to upkeep and sustain that business. So it started taking a toll on me because here it is. It's like, yeah, I thought the answer was to add another van, but that wasn't the case, you know. And then we just get burned out, like us women, you know. I think when we talk about this whole criminal justice reform, and even just going back into how Black people are 4 times more likely to be sent to prison, in that narrative, we're not talking about the men and the women and the children that really are outside of this narrative, that we don't have those resources. You know, we're the ones that's putting money on the books. We're the ones that's putting our house up for collateral for bail. We're the ones that are adopting the children whose parents are incarcerated. We're the ones that's really like holding it down, but we're often left out in that narrative. And when I started, I was young. I was 21, and I didn't realize. I think I was like just so naive that, you know, it was this whole system that really was designed, you know, to like just break us. So my burnout, my personal burnout, was when the men came home. So when my dad came home after 25 years, you know, I wasn't prepared for that. I started realizing I wasn't asking those right questions in the visiting room. I realized that, you know, my loved ones, here it is, they're coming home. And my brother and my dad and my cousin, all three of them came home in 1 year. So after serving 25 years, 11 years, and 20 years, and it was like the burden was on the family members, you know. For my dad, I had to pay his rent for like 9 months just so he could have a home plan to come home to, because he can't use my house because he is a felon, and I'm in the process of adopting, you know, my nephew. So it's so many issues, you know. We're not talking about housing. We're not talking about just like those extra fees that burden falls on us. And I like to think that the women is actually really paying the fee of this whole criminal justice system, if we want to be real. Like, you know, here it is, this system, they came in and they're locking our people up. But who is actually funding it? And it's us, from the phone calls to the bell, to lawyers, to the visits.
Commissary.
To even when they come home, you know, we're here to help them find jobs. So it's like, we're really funding this whole like system that's designed to break us, when really the system should be paying for all this, you know?
Yeah.
It's designed.
Real talk, I hate when people say the war on drugs failed, because it didn't fail. Like, this,
it did,
like
what it was said, supposed to do.
It did what it was supposed to do. There's a systemic and institutional, you know, intention here to for poor communities of color, specifically Black, Latinx, Indigenous communities. So it did what it was supposed to do. It's very successful. It has been very successful. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like we, these families, these women, these communities, like, we are the ones who are holding it down. We're the ones that at the end of the day, you know, we are the rehabilitators, right? Because we got to welcome them people home, and we got to deal with their PTSD. We got to deal with like trying to acclimate them to this is a whole new world for them. If you've been gone for 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, you come out and it's like Star Trek or something. You know what I mean? It's like everything has changed.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Absolutely, we need therapy, but that's taboo in the Black community. Now, more recently, people have been more open about mental health and more open about getting that help. Are you one of those people who was just like, F it, like, because of your social work background, you was like, yo, I know I need help. I'm going to do this.
No, I knew I needed help. You know, like, I knew when I shut my van service down, like, I knew that. You know, I just had this feeling like something is not right. Like, you know, and for so long, you know, I was strong. Like, I was all for it, but I just didn't know what was next. I'm still currently in therapy. I think therapy was one of the best things that I was really able to like do, in all honesty, because even in this cannabis industry, it's hard. You know, people think that, you know, I'm going to start this business, get into this industry, I'm gonna make a lot of money. And then that's when you start realizing that like, ooh, this is hard, you know. And the government, they have the power to legalize this, to decriminalize it, but they're not. They want us to come in and set up these businesses and waste all of our money. And then here it is, they're going to legalize it while we already played around. So I realized that this is really a long game more than anything. And we just got to take care of ourselves while we build this, this business in this industry. And that's what really like motivated me to, you know, slow down with Stay Lifted and really figure out the climate of where this industry is. And I'm like, you know what, free my weed, man. Like, my background is in advocacy. My background is really in the grassroots. I'm that person that's like in the community, like getting the people together. And you know, whether it's telling them to get their medical marijuana card, whether it's telling them to get into the cannabis industry to take up space, that's where I at, you know.
I love it. First of all, I love it. But let me just say this because, okay, so, you know, you come out, you're like, yo, you go see your provider or whatever, and it's like, they're talking about you need medicine. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, well, I do this, you know? Now, that's the scary thing as well, especially like a couple of years ago, right? Okay, so walk me through that. Like, you already had a relationship with your doctor?
No, it was just a new therapist. And I just know how to like advocate. I think probably because I come from that background. So I already knew y'all was going to give me the evaluation. Y'all was going to diagnose me. Then y'all was going to, you know, try to shove some pills. So at first I was like, all right, I'm going to just get the pills and just not even telling them, I'm not even taking them. Then I was like, well, I smoke weed, you know, and I didn't even know that Pennsylvania was even legal. Like, oh, really? I can get a card. So when they told me that, I was like, oh, that's good.
It's just even better.
It's even better. And that's when I just felt relief. Like when I was in therapy at that moment, it was like, I'm just gonna lay everything out on the table. Like I was just tired of just hiding, even prior to going into therapy. I hid it for so long, even from like the social workers. I hid it from my nephew. I hid it from my mom. I hid me smoking just from like anybody probably but my friends, you know? And I would only smoke at night when my nephew went to sleep, or I would only, like, it was just real, you know, like strict. Like I'm gonna wait for
you
to go to sleep.
Like you had a double life. Like you had a double life.
Yeah, it's like, and then, you know, my mom coming in, oh, it's stinking here. And it's just like, huh? Like, mom, come on, you used to smoke reefer. So now my mom got her medical marijuana card. You know, she's healing.
Reefer, girl, you took me back. Like, all these other, it's like, yo, this is just reefer, dude. Like, come on, stop it.
But it's just all about, you know, just breaking that stigma and really, you know, just educating the people. You know, my aunts, of course, they didn't cover it on over yet. They still saying it is stink. But, you know, just keep having those conversations and just healing the people. And I think the more that we heal ourselves, the people that's around us, it's just going to organically, people are going to impact. Now, what you were saying about weed again, like, you know, like slowly but surely people are like circling back saying like, well, I do got pain in my knees and I think it helps with that. So it's just this stigma, you know, that a heavy stigma. And that's the work that I was doing, like Stay Lifted, just encouraging people, you know, hey, if you got this disorder or this disease, you are eligible if you live in Pennsylvania to get, you know, your medical marijuana card.
Yeah, that's so dope. Because first of all, you know, it's your vulnerability, like opening up the door for other people to be able to come to their healing. And I think now the reality is that there are so many ways to consume cannabis, right? It's not even, I mean, some people just don't like the smoking, right? But there's so many ways to consume it now. And when I think about, especially for our elders, like you're talking about your aunts and things like that. And I think about all of the opioids, all of these, like, you know, you see the commercials on TV, like, okay, take this for cholesterol, but it may, you know, cause rectal bleeding and this and that. It's like, well, damn.
And they're not questioning it, or, you know, they'll go to their doctor for, you know, pain medicine and that don't work. And the doctor give them another pill and that don't work. It's like they're willing to go through the list of different pills to see which one works for them. And that's the same thing with cannabis. It's not a like one hit be all and it's going to heal everything. It's really a process. And that's what I tell people, you know, just starting to, you know, just learn more about, you know, the cannabinoids and the terpenes and just start educating. Like I buy every magazine, you know, I read up on it. I read up on the history of it. And I'm in deep, you know, I'm definitely in deep. And now, you know, I'm people who just came home, they're fearful. Like, you know, their parole agents are like, I got a drug test. So even now just persuading them like, hey, you go and get your medical marijuana card from this doctor and you tell, you know, your parole agent that you can consume. But like, it's just that fear that our people got to get through. Like, we were criminalized for this. So it's hard
to
just come in and say, oh, now you can go and get your card, or, you know, now you can like heal this way, because we were criminalized for it. So,
and you know what? We still are. And that to me is like the biggest, like that's the biggest like slap in the face, is that you got people out here making money. You got white people out here making money. You know what I'm saying? For something that people are still serving time. Like people are still behind bars for nonviolent. And I don't even want to just say nonviolent, because the reality is like, if you're doing something that's technically illegal, like there's going to be some damn violence, right? Like,
and that's with, oh my God. Like, so when we look at like nonviolence, you know, and I look at like, I started even looking into my family, like my cousins, my brothers, I started even looking into like their docket sheets, like back before they even court their violent cases. They got locked up for weed. It didn't say for weed, it said illegal substance. So that was, they were smart about that. You know, so even like, it's like they were already locked up. They were already criminalized for it. They weren't able to get a job. They weren't able to get proper housing. And then I think we go into like, this person is still locked up, but what about the people who was murdered? What about the people who didn't even survive this war?
Yeah.
You know, and we don't talk about that. Like, we don't talk about the people who, you know, did try to get into this industry. And here it is, after they did try and they were locked up for this, you know, they went another route. You know, they went to opioids, or here it is, they got caught up in some type of violence, some gun violence or something. Like for my oldest brother, I look at his situation. He was murdered a few years ago, and I looked at his docket and he was locked up for weed, you know? And from there, he had issues finding housing. He had issues finding employment. When he died, him, his girlfriend, and their three kids lived in a one room. We're not talking about that. So it's just people, not everybody made it out. We're talking about a war, but you know, how many
there
people
are casualties. Died? Yeah, there are casualties to the war. And I think you raised a good point that like, yeah, we don't separate, or the system doesn't separate necessarily sale from consumption. So they just locking folks up, right? And then you make them a second class citizen because now they're a felon. And so they don't have access to any of the support, right? For housing, education, any of those things. And so what do you expect them to do, right? Like now, you know, in terms of them being able to get a job, in terms of them being able to, you know, get scholarships and loans for education, now they don't have access to any of that. So it's like, well, what do you expect? And what do you want their next steps to be? You know what I'm saying? I just read an article, one of the old time, like famous wrestlers, Jake the Snake, was talking about like when the WWE banned cannabis, right? So like cannabis stays in your system for at least like 90 days. So you will fail a drug test, but you could take like cocaine or something and that's out of your system in like 2-3 days. So when they banned cannabis, then you had these athletes, you had these, you know, wrestlers or whatever. Now they doing cannabis, or now they doing pills or whatever, because they can still pass the test, right? But it's a totally different thing. And you have people overdosing, you have people chasing it with liquor. So, I mean, it's just a ripple. You said something else I want to touch on. So you were talking about, you got to stay lifted, but you were talking about slowing down. But when I was doing my research, sis, it don't really look like you slowing down. Like, I mean, you got,
well, here's the thing, and I'm gonna be all the way real. So okay, last year I was at MJ Biz, right? At MJ Biz, and this is the reality of it. At MJ Biz, my house was raided. 10 pounds of CBD was took, but it was raided because of the actions of my family members. So because, you know, they use your address for mail, the cops, when they're looking for them, they're coming there. So when my house was raided, you know, it put a set of eyes on me that I'm like, wait, slow down. Like, you know, even with my parties, yeah, they're patient parties, but it's like, I don't want to get in a position where, you know, I'm building this community and they start criminalizing us, you know?
Yeah.
So one of my Halloween parties that I did last year, the cops showed up just randomly, and they never came to any of my other events. So I'm like, you know what? Just slow down. Like, you know, you're moving a little too fast. And from that experience, I was even like opening up a CBD cafe. So I took all my savings that I had from the prison van service to open up the CBD cafe, and I wasn't able to open due to zoning. So when I say slow down, that's when I had to like really like sit back and say like, oh, this industry is only but so fast that you can move. I'm so used to, you know, just creating something and it's scaling up and it's going. So being hit with so many different like roadblocks, you know, my first 3 years, which I appreciate it. You know, all of them are really like lesson learned. Yes. But I just knew that, you know, timing is really just everything. And it's just not the timing right now for what I was doing for Stay Lifted. Yes, I'm still going to, you know, like parties or events and things like that. But just from a different perspective, you know, like educational, just, you know, putting together a little bit more smarter, because we don't know who's watching us. And I'm like the last of in my family that got a clean record, you know, so it has to really stay like that. Because as we know, they come into our communities and they take the leaders. If I'm the leader, you know, like then where do that leave, you know, the people that's on the legacy side that's depending on me to be legal, to, you know, be able to like help them. So that's where the fight for Free My Weed Man came in. It just really just came out of anger. It came out of really just one night I was like, when I wasn't able to open up the cafe, I was like, yo, like just free my weed, man. And I was like, wait, free my weed, man. And that's how like, I came. Man.
So first of all, I love it. Cause it's like free my weed, man. Like the person and like free my weed, man. Like
free my weed, man.
You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing? What we doing?
You know, and I had to just, you know, just take a step back, not saying like, you know, the work that I was doing with Stay Lifted that I won't never do. It's just the timing right now, like the climate that Pennsylvania is in, you know, I need to come more from advocacy side. I need to start, you know, meeting with, you know, state legislators and helping create the language. So I'm doing a lot of work just behind the scenes, just on a nonprofit level, and because that's what's needed, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So first of all, let me say this. I know like your background is social work and all that kind of good stuff. And let me plug this real quick. So if y'all want to see all the dope shit that Crystal puts out, Stay Lifted, Free My Weed Man on IG, Twitter, all that good stuff. It's dope. I mean, I'm seeing you also be a photographer. That's what I'm saying in terms of the slowdown, sis, because like, and we got to get into you being an author as well. But like, you know, you're an entrepreneur. You're founding things. You know what I mean? You're dealing with the advocacy. You're a woman of the people, you know, true to Philly, right? Like that's you all day. But then I see you behind the camera as well. And you're setting stuff up and the shots are beautiful. I see you, you know, doing your photography, like shots taken to you. And so I'm like, well, is she getting into styling? Is she a stylist? Is she this? Is she that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what all is going on? So, okay, so the Free My Weed Man thing. Dig into that. So you gave us the story of the birthing of it, but what's the goal? Like, what's the motivation? And how can people be down? Like, how can people help uplift this work that you're doing?
Yeah, so Free My Weed Man is really a social impact campaign. We have a petition that we're looking to just get as many signatures as we can so we can leverage that with different politicians. Currently, we got like 300 signatures, but we want thousands of signatures. We want to be able to go, you know, to our governor, go to our state reps and say, like, listen, we got a list of 10,000 people. You need these votes. This is how we need cannabis to be written in. So I definitely want to leverage that petition to be able to, you know, like lobby and get the right language, you know, like for cannabis legalization. So one, it is the petition. So if you guys can go on, you know, freemyweedman.com and sign that petition. And then we got the merch, you know, and it really just got the statistic, just letting the people know, like, you know, blacks are 4 times more likely than whites to be, you know, arrested for cannabis. And it's really a conversational piece, whether you're wearing the tote bags or the hoodies, people are going to stop you and say like, hey, I love this. And the goal is to really just build community. And I've been interviewing different people, just getting their stories out. I just left Oakland where I interviewed Tucky Blunt, and he really just gave
love
us his
Tucky. Love Tucky.
His hospitality was like A1. Like, I have to
love
go back.
Him.
Yeah. So, you know, just interviewing different people who was arrested and, you know, making sure that, you know, like, we're building that community of people that we can learn from, like the OGs that been doing it.
Yes.
He got 20 years in, you know, yeah. And just going to him saying like, how can we, you know, do it different over here on the East Coast? So I have been, you know, picking up the camera. And I mean, when you're a small business, you got to wear all hats. So one day I'm the creative director. One day I'm, you know, I'm the CEO and I'm doing paperwork. I'm doing interviews. I'm designing, graphic designing, doing the websites. But I do it all. And it's because of my experience from bridging a gap, my prison van service, where I know how to do it all. But I just want to make sure that our stories are told. And I want to make sure that, you know, we control this narrative. You know, we control the culture. Like, we are the culture in this cannabis industry. And by amplifying that, just by interviewing those people, getting their stories out, you know, just being real authentic and really just serving our people. Like, that's the goal, like, really, is to serve our people the best way possible.
Well, I will definitely be pushing out this petition. I'm 100% in support of this. I need to get it in our newsletter. And I need to order my merch because I went on last night and I was like, oh, I mean, it's hot in Austin, Texas, but I'm like, these socks are dope. Like, I'm in support of these socks. Like, I'm in support of what you got going on. I was like, okay, the sweatsuit, again, it's 100 degrees down here. Mm-hmm. So I have to break it out in the fall. But yeah, people, like,
oh, we got the t-shirts, we got the tote bags. Yeah. So it's good. I'm doing another collection. So my goal is to do a new collection every 90 days.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm designing, you know, like the collections, and you know, I just bought this hand presser t-shirt machine. So just making everything in-house. So even just, you know, bringing it on in-house. And hiring people, hiring children, hiring people who was locked up for it. So that's my way of giving back too, is to hire those same people.
Yeah, no, that's dope. Like I said, the line is dope. I'm plugging it. Hey, y'all, make sure y'all go check it out. Support a small business, support Black women, period. And then also, Free My Weed Man, sign a petition, freemyweedman.com, sign a petition. Okay, so we got to stay lifted. We pausing for that because timing is important. We got this petition going. Advocacy is important. Like, I mean, like, if we're not at the table to influence and impact the language and how it's written for those who are going to have to operate within it, then that's a problem, right? And we get left behind. You're also an author.
Yes. So I have a children's book, me and my nephew, we wrote it, and the illustrator was actually incarcerated. He was a juvenile lifer. So that's like everything that I do, it leads back to people who are incarcerated. And it's called Mommy and Daddy in Timeout. And it just really goes into how, when we have those like initial conversations with our children, you know, we often say like, daddy is in college or mommy is in college. So even when my nephew was like younger, it was like, never really was saying like, daddy is in jail. It was just like, oh, daddy's away. Like, you know, he's in school, or, you know, so mommy and daddy's in timeout. And it really is just a book about, you know, my nephew just dealing with both of his parents just being incarcerated and how he rides his prison van service, you know, to be reunited. It's his whole life, you know, how he, you know, I adopted him. So it was our little, story just as a children's book.
Yeah, that's solid. And like, there are so many kids like him. So shout out to your nephew for just being willing to be open about his experience and his story, and all that good stuff. So in terms of cannabis, so this is something I'm interested in, right? Because I'm a new mom. I'm in the cannabis industry. You know, I consume, and I often think about, and even though I come from a family where you know, that was going on. But I'm also a DARE era kid. You know what I'm saying? So my personal journey, right? The personal journey was very conflicting, right? Because it's like, oh, you're not supposed to do this, but yet I'm over here drinking and, you know what I'm saying? And doing all of those things. And so, you know, again, like the more you mature and you grow and you learn and you do your research and you take matters into your own hands. But I'm always interested in like the conversations that people have and how people are having conversations with our youth, right? So you mm-hmm. talked about with your nephew, you've adopted your nephew. I've seen the pictures of him. He's so handsome. But you say you started off like it was like this double life of like doing stuff at night and trying to make sure that he didn't see this and he didn't see that. And so how are y'all conversations now? Because he's a teenager now. Like he's older.
Oh, he's a teenager. Listen, he's all in with me. Like he's helping me package orders. You know, he helped me just set up my events. But I think he has a better understanding. And, you know, before when he was younger, he'll be like, oh, it's thing. Now he like, I ain't being handled my, like she down there medicating. Like he right over there. But I still don't, like, I still didn't get comfortable where like I'm smoking in front of him. Yeah. And he like, I know you smoking, but it's like, I just can't. So I still didn't get comfortable where I'm just sitting here rolling up. Like I probably would have been smoking right now if he was at school or somewhere, but he's right over there where, you know, it's just, you know, that fine line, you know, yeah. I don't, but it's like, he knows that I'm smoking, but it's like, I never really like sat and rolled up while he right there. Like we not there. You know,
yeah,
but he understand like the business side of things. Even with Free My Weed, man, he got the job of just packaging up the orders. You know, just
put him on payroll.
So yeah, slowly putting him on payroll. But yeah, like we're having those conversations. You know,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure like even like some of his friends be like, oh, your aunt sell weed or your aunt do weed, like, and you know, he kindly like check him, like, no, that's her medicine. But for the most part, I think he's getting even more like just comfortable with those conversations. Because, you know, over time, it's like, all right, this is my aunt business. Like, this is what she do.
And I think you're normalizing it. You're normalizing it in the conversation he has with his friends. Because it's not just like back in the day, Cheech and Chong, like, oh, we're going to get high and we just going to sit on the couch and like veg out. I'm not saying anything's wrong with that, because occasionally that's what you need to do. Right? Like for your wellness, sometimes you just need to chill the fuck out and sit on the couch and relax. But you can be productive. You know, there are entrepreneurs, you know, you are a college graduate. There are people who are out here choosing this as their form of medication, and they're very productive.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like the way that they were like that DARE program was like in our schools, like my goal is to have a Free My, like a program inside of these schools, really teaching these kids the agriculture side of it, teaching them, you know, like how to grow cannabis, the business side of cannabis, because they were in our schools like brainwashing us, saying no to drugs, and I was scared, you know, like that's, they need to have that same energy right now in our schools saying psych, we made it up. Yep, you know, because like
against all the science. Like I remember that commercial with the egg, you cracking the egg in the skillet. I'm like, oh my God, your brain is being fried. Oh my God, this is so horrible. And I mean, they literally had me like thinking like weed was on the same level of crack as crack or something.
Yes. For years, I thought I did something bad and I was like, but it make me feel good. Like I just didn't know. Like I was, you know, I smoke, but you know, I feel good, but I'm not supposed to be feeling like this. Like, no, y'all need to have that same energy getting back into our schools. And honestly, I'm not even going to like tell them they need to do it. Give us the resources so we can do it ourselves. Like, you know,
right.
Give us the resources. We can go in our own schools and educate our own people on, you know, how we can enter this business, how they can, you know, grow it, the education, the science behind it. The same way how they came in weekly telling us how bad they was there weekly with the cops.
Girl, t-shirts and everything.
T-shirts and hats.
Like for real. Okay, so what's next for you?
So right now I've been, so when I met you guys at South by Southwest, my documentary, A Woman on the Outside, premiered there. Mm. Since South by Southwest, we had 4 screenings at different film festivals. We're currently working on an impact campaign where we're going to be partnering with different nonprofits, government officials, to really just start that conversation of who, like, defining, you know, the directly impacted. You know, I think when we, like, define directly impacted, it's more so the person who committed the crime. But what about, you know, the family members that's, like, holding it up, holding everything together when it comes to the gun violence in our community, when it comes to supporting loved ones, when it comes to even just supporting children of incarcerated, the kinship care system. Just connecting with just different organizations and different government officials to see how we can use this documentary as a way to start those conversations and, you know, just start making change and start, you know, righting the wrongs. Like, I feel like there's a lot of children that's in the foster care system because of, you know, the war on drugs, whether, you know, whether it was cannabis or whether they're, you know, their parents are on higher, you know, drugs. We still got to right those wrongs. So yeah. Looking at the different systems that's responsible for keeping the Black family and our families, you know, disconnected, that's the foster care system. You know, that's probation and parole. How can we, you know, work with probation and parole to see when a person come home, they can, you know, part of their home plan is them getting a medical marijuana card if they got PTSD or any other, you know, qualifying conditions. Yeah. How can we, like, make a lot of these things automatic, as opposed to saying, like, oh, you know, if we drug test you, then you may be going back. So we're definitely working on that impact campaign and just getting that word out. Okay. And then it's like Free My Weed Man, to work with Free My Weed Man. Vending, we're looking to vend at, you know, different festivals. We just vended at the National Cannabis Fest in DC that just passed. So that was a huge success for us. But looking just to get that word out there and just really just start in the streets, you know, the advocacy side of it, just taking it really back to the streets.
Yeah. So, okay, wait. So Woman on the Outside, what? I need to see this documentary. Okay. So I mean, how can the people see this? Like, how can we uplift this? How can we help you with getting this pushed out?
So right now we're going to be creating like a 10-minute snippet, because the whole documentary is like an hour. It's probably like 80 minutes long. But we want to really just create probably like a 10-minute snippet just so we can start that conversation. Inside the documentary is about me and, you know, just being a woman on the outside. It shows how, like, in the documentary, you can see how my health really just deteriorates, like, how I'm running this prison van service and I'm getting sick. I'm looking sick. You know, I'm just so skinny and it's like, oh, girl, you look bad. You know, but it also shows like life is happening. You know, my brother was murdered. My dad just came home after 25 years. My brother just came home. I'm in the process of adopting my nephew. So it really just shows, you know, what it's like for a woman to really sit here and take on this whole system and just really just get burned out from it. But right now we're only pitching it to film festivals, but within this impact campaign, we are looking to work with like different nonprofits or organizations. So if you know any organizations, like any national organizations that we can, you know, come to like a training just to show, you know, the snippet and just have that conversation, we're looking, you know, to do it. But as far as like the full documentary, it's only going to be showed at like the film festivals, because, you know, our goal is for like a network to pick it up. Our next film festival is going to be next month at the National Black Film Festival in Miami.
Okay.
We picked up at different film festivals. We just left the Dockland in San Francisco. But no, like, we are looking to bring it into the community and just having those conversations. But to play like the full length of it, it will only be showing at like the film festivals.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you got to do what you got to do, right? And we want to see this on the big screen, for real. You know what I mean? We want this on Netflix. We want this on Amazon Prime. Hey, good people, if y'all listening.
We got to show that it's an audience, you know what I mean? Like, this is like, we don't talk about the woman on the outside. So we have to, like,
it really just starts within a community right now. And like I told them, we don't want to go too fast because then like, look at Kanye. Like Kanye, if he sold his documentary back then, they wouldn't have got what they got now. So fast, you know, that we should move with this. And I feel like the space that we are now is just going, you know, going into the community and really just starting those conversations. So if anybody work at an organization, whether it's for foster care, kinship care, reentry, gun violence, just supporting women who support incarcerated loved ones, women who just came home from prison, we want to screen this at your company, at your training. We want to use this as a tool to have those conversations.
Yes. My mind is racing, going through like the mental Rolodex of like, who do I know? And so I will definitely, of course, have some follow-up emails. Because that's, I kind of consider myself the connector. I'm like, yo, you need to talk to this person. You need to talk to that person. So we will make that stuff happen. For those who are in Miami, please check out the film festival. So that's going to be in June, right?
June 16th, yes.
June 16th. Okay, so if you're in Miami, check that out. Crystal, it has been such a damn pleasure. You got to come back. You got to get that snippet. I want to air the snippet. I want to uplift it. I want to put it out on all the platforms. So when you're ready, like, you always have a place here for whatever you're doing, whatever message, however I can help, is like, say less. Just hit me up. You got my info. Signing off message to the people. First of all, let me say this. Hey, Crystal and all her dopeness, stay lifted. Free my weed, man. Check out the Instagram, follow, and also go to freemyweedman.com to sign the petition. This is important. This is the advocacy work, y'all. We got to make sure that the numbers are there, especially if you in Pennsylvania, if you in Philly, you know, y'all are the voters. These people are there, supposed to be for the people, by the people, supporting your interests, uplifting your interests. So we need you to show up and show out. Like, subscribe, all that good shit. And I'm gonna let Crystal take us out. What you got, boo?
Thanks for having me. All I got is free my weed, man. Just free my weed, man. That's it. But no, this truly was an honor, you know, just sitting here just chatting it up with you. But yeah, free my weed, man. We got work to do.
Absolutely. Y'all, to the next time. Stay blunt.